Good morning, friends. Welcome into the Mike Allen Show here on this Monday, March 7th. Looking forward to spending the next couple of hours with you. Next hour, John Allen will be on the program. John, who's the associate editor of Crux Now, an affiliate of the Boston Globe, who reports regularly from Rome, though he's stateside right now. Actually going to be catching him in Denver, his home, while he's getting ready to leave for Minneapolis. Speaking engagement, no rest for the weary. And John Allen, I think, one of the most respected Catholic journalists in the English-speaking world. And he'll be on to talk a little bit about what he wrote in his Sunday All Things Catholic article on CruxNow.com, which is a great resource for keeping up with news in the Catholic world. John Allen, talking about some Indian martyrs that we don't need to forget, and why that we need to place remembering them as a priority on the church's list. John Allen has written extensively. He's written a book about it. He continues to draw attention to the anti-Christian persecution that's taking place all over the world right now, and doing a great service for us. So we'll look forward to talking to John Allen about that. Interestingly enough, his column coming out the same weekend, news broke at the end of last week about the killing of four missionaries of charity, four of Mother Teresa's order's sisters there in Yemen, brutally gunned down. And so we continue to pray that the blood of the martyrs will be the seed of the church and for comfort for those grieving and mourning. It is also the feast day of Saints Perpetua and Felicity, who both died a martyr's death, and we'll learn a little bit more about them as we go through the program today. Also, Bo Ryan, the Wisconsin head basketball coach, and our misplaced priorities. We'll get into that. Complementarity without stereotypes, and the new app for picking baby names. Interestingly enough, if you struggle with picking a baby name, maybe this new app can help you. We'll also spin the Dollar Catechism wheel. We'll give out our What Were You Thinking awards and look back in history, all that and more. And certainly welcome your calls anytime during the program today. 573-4-BREAD-4 is the number that you can call or text. 573-4-BREAD-4, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. I'll give you the question of the day in the next segment. Hope you had a great weekend. Not too intense, really. Saturday was nice. Didn't really accomplish a whole lot, which was good. And then yesterday, not too bad either. I was originally supposed to teach a marriage prep class and ended up getting canceled because of the lack of response. So it's kind of a free day, I guess, when that happens. Though I did speak to about 90 confirmation students, a follow-up from the week before where I talked to them about St. John Paul II's theology of the body, and followed that up with a Q&A session last night. But amazingly enough, well, I say that sarcastically, very few questions. Nobody wants to, when there are 90 of you and you're 14 or 15 years old, who wants to raise a question about an issue like human sexuality? So anyway, but I survived that. No worse the wear, and all is good. Also worked on my taxes this weekend, and I'm having the rude awakening after getting used to having lots of deductions. You know, we have seven children in our home. They're now all getting older. I'm able to claim fewer of them as dependents. And while I'm happy that they are growing into self-sufficient adults, as far as that goes, right? None of us truly self-sufficient, but self-supporting. Doing my taxes isn't nearly as fun, because that was the one thing. Not that it equaled out, but I could always count on a nice refund check. Not so much anymore. May have to adjust some of my exemptions, see if we can get that rectified. Anyway, as I said today, the feast day of Saints Perpetua and Felicity. If you're like me, really before this weekend, I didn't know that much about the two martyrs. Always knew that they were mentioned whenever the priest would, in praying the prayer for the Mass, the Eucharistic prayer, the liturgy, would use the long version. You know what I'm talking about. You're there in Mass, and all of a sudden you realize, you know, the priest is praying what's called Eucharistic Prayer 1, which is much longer and, you know, talks about, all kind of goes into sort of extended side paths and all the rest. Anyway, we always hear this part in Eucharistic Prayer 1. For ourselves, too, we ask some share in the fellowship of your apostles and martyrs. with John the Baptist, Stephen, Matthias, Barnabas. And this is where a priest can take liberty, if he wants to add as many names as he wants. And usually on the higher holy days, there are more names included. But oftentimes you'll hear these names: Ignatius, Alexander, Marcellinus, Peter, Felicity, Perpetua, Agatha, Lucy, Agnes, Cecilia, Anastasia, and all the saints. So you hear those names, Perpetua and Felicity. You know they're ancient martyrs. You know they were significant in the life of the church as they're included in that Eucharistic prayer. But I had to do a little reading about them this weekend because, this being their feast day, I realized I didn't know that much about them. They were Christian martyrs of the 3rd century. Vibia Perpetua was a married noblewoman, said to have been 22 years old at the time of her death, and the mother of an infant she was nursing. Felicity was a slave imprisoned with her and pregnant at the time, who would later be martyred with Perpetua. They were put to death along with the others at Carthage in the Roman province of Africa. So I've said before, one of the things that is misunderstood at times about persecution in the early church is that it was constant. It was not constant. There were seasons of intense persecution in the Roman Empire, including under the emperors Domitian in the late 89 to 96 AD, basically in the late 1st century, Trajan, Marcus Aurelius in the mid 2nd century, and in this particular persecution under Septimius Severus in the late 2nd century, early 3rd century, and Perpetua and Felicity, victims of that persecution. Here we're drawing information from the website Catholic Culture, because the account, this is actually from a written account we have of the martyrdom of Saints Perpetua and Felicity. It's one of the most ancient texts we have of early Christian martyrdom. We talked about Polycarp's martyrdom not too long ago. It's of similar ancient validity. And we see these about these two great saints. As Catholic Culture tells us, Vibia Perpetua, who was a well-to-do young woman and mother, and Felicity, or Felicitas, a slave who gave birth to a child 3 days before suffering a martyr's death. They were catechumens who had been recently baptized. The persecution under Septimus Severus was particularly severe, and these two holy women suffered death on the 7th of March in Carthage. That's why today is the feast day. In the Christian tradition, typically the day of someone's martyrdom would be the day of their celebration as a saint, not their earthly birth, but their birth into heavenly glory. There is an account in the Liturgy of the Hours that relates the following touching episode. The Liturgy of the Hours, the official prayer book of the church. Now the day had arrived when they were to be thrown to the wild beasts. Felicity began to be sorrowful because she feared she would have to wait longer than her companions. For 8 months she had been pregnant, and therefore, according to Roman law, could not be executed before the birth of the child. But the prayers of her fellow sufferers hastened her time, and she gave birth to a baby girl. Look, I don't like pain. Yeah, I went in Friday after the show and got a tooth worked on. I had a cavity in one of my rear wisdom teeth. Yes, I have my wisdom teeth. They had to numb me 3 different times because each time they started to drill, I was about ready to climb out of the chair. I think me being a redhead, we supposedly have a higher tolerance for anesthesia, and I found that to be true some other occasions in my life as well. Anyway, all to say, I don't like pain. I don't like a dentist drill. I don't like the whole experience. What a wimp. Felicity, who was pregnant, was actually upset about the fact that her pregnancy would keep her from being martyred with her companions. She was so anxious to give her life away to the Lord. And so they prayed, her and her fellow captives, that she would give birth to her baby girl more hastily. And while she was suffering from the pains of childbirth, one of the guards called out to her, "If you're suffering so much now, what will you do when you're thrown to the wild beasts?" "Now I suffer," she answered, but there another will be in me who will suffer for me, because I will suffer for him. When she was in travail, she had sorrow, but when she was set before the wild beasts, she rejoiced, dying a martyr's death. There is a long account. I actually found an even lengthier account on PBS's website, believe it or not, the prison diary of this young woman, Perpetua, there in 202 or 203 AD, about her death. One of the things interesting about Perpetua was that she faced opposition even from her own family. Her father was so angered by the word Christian, she writes, that he moved towards me as though he would pluck my eyes out, but he left it at that and departed, vanquished along with his diabolical arguments. He was upset with her that she would not offer the incense offering of prayer to the Roman gods to save herself, but that she was committed to standing true for the faith, even in the face of death. Now, that's going to be the context, the story of martyrdoms like Perpetua and Felicity and others who died such a brutal death for their faith. It's going to be the context for the question of the day that I'm going to ask you in the next segment. It's going to have something to do with the Emperor Constantine and his conversion to the Christian faith, which really changed the game in many ways for Christians living under persecution and fear. So we'll get into that on the other side of the break. Welcome your calls, 573-4BREAD-4. This is The Mike Allen Show. Minutes past the hour, you are back on The Mike Allen Show here on this Monday, March 7th, 20 days away that we are now from Easter and counting. We had Laetare Sunday yesterday, on that Sunday that is the fourth Sunday of Lent, that over the hill mark where we're on our way. Now, over the hill doesn't mean, by the way, in Lenten terms, that we've gotten past the tough point and we're on the way to the easy point. It's kind of like, I was thinking about this yesterday, like the Boston Marathon. As they say, the first 20 miles or so of the Boston Marathon are relatively easy. I guess that's all in context, right? But it's when you hit, what is it, Heartbreak Hill, somewhere around the 20-mile mark. That's the brutal part of the marathon when you're exhausted and you hit that long incline. In the same way, even though we, yes, are over halfway chronologically through our Lenten journey, that doesn't mean that we now ease up. In fact, it gets more intense the closer we get to the Passion and to the cross. That's where Jesus had his face set like flint, and those behind him stood back, and they were amazed and afraid. So whatever has been the case of our Lent, the gravity with which we've approached it, we do have an opportunity now in the last 3 weeks here. We've got this week, next week, and then that most holy of weeks, including culminating, of course, in the Triduum. If you have never been to an Easter vigil before, which is that Easter Mass, which is celebrated after sundown, the night before Easter, make plans now to be a part of it. It really is a beautiful experience, and as the high liturgy of the church's year, it really is a window into the mystery of the church and the beauty of the faith and Christ's redemptive work that that can't be replicated any other way. 573-4BREAD-4 if you want to give us a call. 573-4BREAD-4. Email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, here on this feast day of the martyrdom of Saints Perpetua and Felicity. Yesterday, as I tend to do in preparing for the Looking Back in History segment, discovered that on this day in 321, the Roman Emperor Constantine decreed that Sunday, the day of the sun, is the day of rest for the entire Roman Empire. Now, Constantine's journey was an interesting one, of course. He had his famous vision of the cross in the sky before a major battle, which brought about his interior conversion to the Christian faith. Of course, he issued what was called the Edict of Milan, which was the official statement of religious toleration in the Roman Empire, which, as I said, changed the game in many ways for what the earliest Christians had had to endure at the hands of the Romans. In fact, as the old saying goes, it gets darker just before the dawn. The persecutions that Christians had suffered in the Roman Empire just before the Edict of Milan under Diocletian and then Galerius had been among the worst that Christians had ever endured. And so Constantine's conversion, which would not be sealed, of course, until his baptism on his deathbed, but his conversion changed the game for Christianity, the empire, and it wouldn't be long before Constantine, after this edict making Sunday the official day of rest, would make Christianity the official religion of the Roman Empire. There's been a lot of debate about it over the centuries, particularly, I think, since the Protestant Reformation, the Protestant Revolt back in the 1500s, of whether or not Constantine's conversion was, in fact, good for Christianity or bad for Christianity. Was Christianity better somehow as a persecuted religion than it was as a religion that had the blessing of the state? And that's my question of the day. And we'll get into this question in a later segment today. 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4. You can call or text. I think a lot of people are of the opinion that, you know, the church was much better off as a persecuted faith. The blood of the martyrs is the seed of the church and all that. And certainly the martyrs who bore witness even under threat of death during the earliest centuries of the church really did fuel the growth of the church underground. But I think we make a mistake if we readily dismiss what happened under Constantine as simply a bad thing. So we'll get into all that. But your opinion is welcome. Do you think Constantine's conversion to Christianity was a good thing or a bad thing for the faith? 573-4-BREAD-4, call or text, or you can email me, mikeallenshow@gmail.com, or you can post your response on Facebook or Twitter. We've already had a few people respond on that question. The big news in the sports world, of course, is that Peyton Manning today is allegedly going to announce his retirement. Now, you know, he is going out on top. He's going out in the Super Bowl as Super Bowl champion, as we talked about at the end of last week. You know, he had options that maybe were not the most favorable in the world. Denver probably was not going to re-sign him, and so he was going to have to land somewhere else. Of course, he did not have a good season last year. It's certainly age catching up with him. Others are speculating, of course, that some of the controversies associated with Peyton, the Title IX lawsuit going on down in Tennessee that mentions an incident that happened with him when he was a player there in the late 90s, as well as some of the HGH allegations that in the end, it's going to prove to be something that he just doesn't want to deal with under that spotlight as a player, and so he's stepping down. And certainly, I hope there's nothing to any of the allegations, but certainly wish the best for Peyton. He's had a career that I think certainly puts him among the top five quarterbacks, at least in the Super Bowl era, to ever play the game. I think that's hard to argue. Other big news this weekend, shocking NBA upset yesterday. Some people are calling it the biggest upset of all time. And that was the Lakers' upset of the Golden State Warriors. Golden State, who's trying to beat the Bulls' 1996 record of 72 wins in a season. They were sitting pretty at 55-5 going against the horrific Los Angeles Lakers on a Sunday game. The Lakers sitting at 13-51. And according to the recap or the summary of the game, the disparity between the two in terms of power rating makes this perhaps the biggest upset in NBA history. Or not so much power rating and winning percentage. Here we go. Entering Sunday's game, the teams had a 0.727 difference in win percentage, making the Lakers win the biggest upset in NBA history, according to ESPN stats and information. Kobe Bryant, of course, in his swan song season, chipped in 12 for the Lakers in the upset. So maybe it was just a day off for the Warriors. We'll see whether that forebodes anything about their future. College basketball, the major conferences wrapping up their regular season over the weekend, now getting ready for tournament play. This is where the fun starts. We'll be sitting here next Monday with an NCAA tournament bracket in hand. And we'll be ready to start our Bracketology with Father Frank Bronner contest. Father Frank, our favorite prognosticating priest, and we'll have him on the program ready to make his picks and to compare our picks with his. And we'll have a nice prize in store. So be thinking about it, be following up or studying up on your teams this week. One thing I was glad to see is that our friend and friend of the show, Coach Bob McKillop, down to Davidson with a big win over the weekend. Putting Davidson now, I think, at the either 6 or 7 seed, 6 seed, I think, going into the Atlantic 10 tournament this weekend. So we'll be pulling for them as well, as I'll, of course, be pulling for my Kentucky Wildcats, too. It's still a lot up in the air in terms of the number one seeds in the tournament and, you know, who's going to be the odds-on favorite, because it's as wide open as it's probably ever been, this NCAA tournament. So, it's going to be a tough one to pick, no doubt. As we typically do this time of the program, we look, span the globe for examples of humans not putting their best thinking foot forward. And so we're going to give away our What Were You Thinking Awards.
I know what I was feeling. Yeah, I know what I was feeling. What was I thinking?
Okay, we got some good ones here. This out of the state of Minnesota. Those cold winters, things get crazy up there. Dog peers out of semi after smashing rig into tree and car. Customers at a Minnesota gas station were in for a surprise Friday when they saw a golden Labrador retriever drive a semi-truck up onto a curb and into a tree. Mankato, you recognize that if you ever watched the old Little House on the Prairie show. Mankato police said the idling truck apparently was put into gear, then went through a parking lot, across the street, and over a curb. A passerby discovered the dog sitting in the driver's seat when he jumped into the truck to stop it. So we're going to give the first nominee to the dog, who should have known he needed a CDL. You don't drive those trucks without that. Secondly, is a little bit of a throwback. Church allows nude worship. This actually from a couple of years ago. A church in the U.S. state of Virginia has taken the bizarre decision to allow its congregation to attend services in the nude. Pastor Alan Parker, the leader of, you can't make this up, Whitetail Chapel in the town of Southampton, said he came to a decision to allow naked worship after concluding the clothing requirements of other churches were pretentious. Decided his own flock should be free to forego such materialism if they desire. He believes he's in good company, too, claiming that one of the most important moments, many of the most important moments in the Bible, happened while the protagonists were nude, including Jesus' crucifixion and resurrection. Well, we'll pick this up on the other side of the break, including the winner. It's even better than that. Of the What Were You Thinking Award. This is the Mike Allen Show.
What was I thinking?
Welcome back into the Mike Allen Show. We're at the bottom of the hour. You just got Rickrolled, Radio Rickroll. Actually, this song was number one, believe it or not, back in 1988. One of my favorite things going around on the internet meme world is that Rick Astley would make the perfect political candidate. I mean, this song was number one in an election year. We're in an election year. Remember, he would never give you up. He would never let you down. He would never run around. He would never desert you. He would never make you cry. He would never say goodbye. He would never tell a lie or hurt you. To me, hey, that's an improvement over our current crop of political candidates. So, Rick Astley for president, 2016. Who would his running mate be? That's the question, I guess. Anyway, 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4, if you want to call in. My question of the day, or you can talk about anything else we've discussed. My question of the day is, what do you think Constantine's conversion, in which he therefore then made Christianity ultimately the official religion of the Roman Empire. Do you think it was a good thing or a bad thing for Christianity? Different opinions on that, both among Catholics and among Protestants. And we'll get into that a little bit later. I want to get back to our What Were You Thinking awards. We gave away our first two nominees. The second one, of course, the church there, the White Tail Chapel in Virginia, who is allowing their parishioners to worship naked. Interesting. The pastor says some of the most important biblical moments were when people were naked. When Jesus was born, he was naked. When he was crucified, he was naked. And when he arose, he left his clothes in the tomb and he was naked. If God made us that way, how can that be wrong? He added. He's also believed to have drawn some of his opinions on nudity from the book of Genesis, in which Adam and Eve were originally described as both naked, the man and wife not ashamed. He also says nudity is a great equalizer, reminding all those gathered in the church they're simple human beings, and that beneath any personal wealth or glamorous outward appearance, they are all more or less the same beneath the clothing. I think clothing would be the great equalizer, in my opinion. Anyway, there's a picture of a guy blurred out in the conspicuous places, sitting in the seat that has a cup holder in it, believe it or not, in the church. Interestingly enough, thankfully he has a towel over his seat. I'll say no more about that. Anyway, so you think, how could you get any better than that? Well, my friend Matt Swaim, who hosts a Catholic radio show out of the Sunrise Morning Show out of Cincinnati, tweeted this over the weekend. Just overheard a guy bragging about taking a White Castle Crave case on his flight as a carry-on. Now, I love a good sack of White Castles. Those White Castle sliders, that good onion taste, that's really good. But as you know, with eating White Castles, there's always a price to be paid later. So my question is, if you're taking a Crave case on your flight, you better hope it's a short flight, or that at the very least, they have an excellent ventilation system. So come on, man, a Crave case on your flight, not good. What were you thinking, man? 573-4BREAD-4 if you want to call. We always welcome, by the way, your nominees for the What Were You Thinking Award of the Day. Whether you want to call or text 573-4BREAD-4, email me, mikeallenshow@gmail.com, or post your response on Facebook or on Twitter. Moving on, I saw something funny this weekend. Jimmy Kimmel, of course, who has a late night show on ABC, and one of his features is what he calls the lie witness news. Now, of course, this weekend, big political day as well. There were elections in several states of the primaries, including here in the state from which we broadcast from, the state of Kentucky. But there was not one in the state of California this weekend. In fact, the state of California's primary is not until June. But if you've seen Jimmy Kimmel's lie witness news before, it's where they go out on the street and they interview people with false scenarios to see if people will either recognize that it's false or whether they'll play along and basically lie for the camera. So they went out and asked people who they voted for in the Super Tuesday election, even though California did not have a primary and won't have one until June. But that didn't stop people from lying and claiming to have voted there in California. So here is a clip from Jimmy Kimmel's Lie Witness News.
News.
Huge day in California. It's Super Tuesday. Who'd you vote for this morning?
Hillary Clinton.
How was it at the polling place?
Pretty crazy, but yeah, just feeling good about it. So
Super Tuesday today, did you vote?
Oh yes, I voted for Trump.
This morning here in California?
Yes.
What was your polling place like? Who was there?
Oh yeah, it was at the City Hall in Norwalk, down in Norwalk, and I was just voting right there. A lot of people, you know, it was kind of packed. It was all right, nice little turnout.
Huge morning in California, it's Super Tuesday. Who'd you vote for this morning?
Hillary.
And what was your polling place like? Was it crowded?
Crowded, yeah.
How were the lines at your polling place this morning when you voted?
The lines definitely were long. It was a lot of
mixed supporters, definitely there for Bernie, definitely there for some people for Trump, but I definitely saw a lot of outturn for Hillary.
Big morning in California, Super Tuesday, who'd you vote for?
Oh, Bernie Sanders, all the way. I actually had to re-register as a Democrat out of Green Party in order for me to get him in.
How was your polling place this morning when you voted?
It wasn't too bad.
People will say anything for the camera. These are the people who are determining our next elected leader, ladies and gentlemen. It was a big weekend this weekend for Ted Cruz, I think, and for Bernie Sanders, both of them making a little bit of a rally and maybe blunting a little bit of the talk of inevitability for their opponents. We'll have to see how it turns out. Well, I would say certainly with both, I'd say within the next 2 weeks at the very least, we'll know a lot about who is going to be the nominee in both parties. I think, as I said last week, I think Marco Rubio is done. And I think John Kasich is done. If John Kasich could pull off Ohio, maybe he could rally a little bit. I don't know. But I think Marco Rubio, if he cannot win Florida, if you can't win your home state, you're done. And nothing this weekend would give Marco Rubio supporters, I think, any sort of hope that he's capable of being the real challenge to Donald Trump. I think that mantle has fallen on Ted Cruz. It'll either be him or nobody. I came across a pretty funny article over the weekend on, speaking of politics, the Washington Post, saying that the Republican establishment, who, as all accounts indicate, do not want Donald Trump to be the Republican nominee, they're working through the five stages of grief as Donald Trump moves through the election. You may be familiar with the five stages of grief popularized by Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. It's, how people go through loss, that there are tend to be familiar patterns, and how the Republican establishment is going through these five patterns. The first, of course, is denial. So, for a long time, the idea was, oh, yeah, look, I know Donald Trump's leading the polls and everything, but come on, that's not going to last. He's not going to be the nominee. Step number two, according to Kubler-Ross, after denial is anger. And so you now have some key figures who basically stayed on the sidelines for the past year, now rushing to raise money and get ads up on the air that will drive up Trump's negatives before all these winner-take-all primaries begin on March 15th, including Mitt Romney, the 2012 nominee, coming out with an ad attacking Trump. Stage three, of course, if I can get my thing to scroll down here. Stage three in her stages of grief is bargaining. That's kind of the place we are now. You're beginning to hear people say things like, I think maybe I could work with Trump. Or people are thinking of how to team up to stop Trump, right? A Cruz Rubio ticket. That would be just the thing that would stop him. Step four is depression. Senator Roy Blunt of Missouri saying one of the reasons there's a whole lot of pressure to do something here is that there's a general sense that there's probably not a whole lot you can do. Al Cardenas, a Miami-based lobbyist who backed Jeb Bush, said, if you don't see a donor rush, it's because people are seeing what I'm seeing. Show me how Trump can be beaten. Cardenas told Ed O'Keefe, I'm off the grid. I put my heart and soul into helping Jeb, and I'm just not ready to get back into this thing anytime soon. And then stage five is acceptance. Well, I'm not sure we're quite there yet, but there is that sense of getting there. I just thought that was a hilarious take on this, the five stages of grief, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, and how we're seeing it among the GOP establishment. Let's look back in history a little bit on this day over the years. March 7th, what are some other things that have happened? Trying to find Rufus here. Looking back in history. Well, let's see here. We got it there, Ethan.
Dude,
these are the circuits of history, gentlemen. They'll take us to any point and we wish.
Who are we?
Gentlemen, we're history.
don't know much about this. All right, so on this day in 1274, Thomas Aquinas, the angelic doctor, the Italian theologian and saint, died at the age of 48. Rest in peace, St. Thomas. On this day in 1530, King Henry VIII's divorce request denied by the Pope. Henry declared that he, not the Pope, is the supreme head of England's church. 1950, born on this day, Franco Harris, 66th birthday to the great Pittsburgh Steeler running back, and Bryan Cranston. This day, 1956, he's 60 years old, of course, the star actor of what I think is the greatest series in television history, Breaking Bad. I've started watching Better Call Saul now, which is a lot of fun. We'll be back with a new segment. This is The Mike Allen Show. Fifteen minutes before the hour, you are back on The Mike Allen Show. Here on this Monday, March 7th, asking a question of the day. It was on this day in 321 AD that Constantine, the Emperor Constantine, who had undergone his own religious spiritual awakening, let's say, to the truth of the Christian faith, made Sunday a day of rest throughout the Roman Empire. This was not long before he made Christianity the official religion of the Roman Empire. And so I'm asking the question of the day, do you think Constantine's conversion ultimately good or bad for Christianity? And you get opinions on both sides of this issue, even among Catholics, but especially I think you get the negative connotation among Protestants who see somehow that the church got corrupted by the state and by power after Constantine's conversion, and whereas the church had been a grassroots sort of movement that was willing to suffer and be persecuted and grow stronger under that suffering, that it kind of lost its way and somehow identified the kingdom of God with the kingdom of this world. Some comments we've gotten on this from Facebook, which, by the way, you're welcome to comment. If you call or text 5734-BREAD-4, email me mikeallenshow@gmail.com or comment on Facebook or on Twitter. Laura says, I'd say removing the threat of death for practicing the faith was a good development. Calling the Council of Nicaea worked out pretty well for us, too. It was the emperor, really, who ended up prompting the need or the call for the Council of Nicaea, where there was much division over the identity and the nature of Christ as either being divine, which the Council of Nicaea, inspired the Holy Spirit, decreed, or that Christ was simply the greatest creature that God had made, which was the teacher of Arius and his followers, the teaching of Arius and his followers. Mark says, good, indeed, very good. Constantine probably meddled too much, and he wasn't a perfect guy, but Christianity needed the Council of Nicaea to set a few things straight, and he was a driving force behind that council. Chuck takes the alternate view. Chuck says, perhaps nothing was more detrimental to the faith. I've heard it referenced as the Constantinian captivity of the church. At that moment, it went from being a conspiracy of kindness and an insurgent social movement to being the established church. It went from being persecuted to becoming the persecutor, from being centered on the kingdom of God to being co-opted by the kingdom of man. We Christians do well as outsiders, but our faith is simply not constructed of the stuff of governance, Chuck writes. Our king was one of humility and sacrifice. The kingdom of this world is about power and control. I could go on and on, but the bottom line is we lost the most on the day we thought we had won the most. I'd say Chuck's viewpoint is kind of the standard boilerplate for those who say his conversion and his establishing, and I guess, I mean, people would probably all agree, anybody's conversion's a good thing, but what Constantine did in terms of establishing Christianity as the official religion of the Roman Empire, they would say caused more harm than good. And this is a common point of view, I would say, largely among Protestant Christians who see the church after Constantine as becoming a church of apostasy or turning from the true faith, or again, being too intertwined with political power. Now, arguing against that is this excellent piece, and I tend to be sympathetic toward it, this excellent article in the Catholic Herald that talks about Constantine's gifts. I'm sorry, this is Catholic World Report. Sorry, Constantine's gift to Christianity. This from Benjamin Weicker. On the anniversary of Constantine's conversion, we should consider why the West seems to be converting back to paganism. And part of the issue that Weicker takes is that we tend to want to glamorize persecution and to glamorize the experience of martyrdom. He said there are, for example, those who take Constantine's conversion as the beginning of the end of real Christianity. Christianity, they argue, is the Christianity of the early church. The church before it became favored and hence entangled with the empire, the pure church, the church before Constantine, the church of the martyrs. Weicker says the problem with this romantic vision of the pure early church is that it wasn't shared by the early church. We owe it to them to take things, first of all, from their point of view. From very early on, Christians were horribly persecuted by the pagan Roman Empire. Going back to, of course, the Great Fire in Rome in 64 AD, in which Nero blamed the Christians as scapegoats and made of them an imperial spectacle. As the historian Tacitus tells us, their deaths were made farcical, dressed in wild animal skins. They were torn to pieces by dogs or crucified or made into torches to be ignited after dark as substitutes for daylight. Persecutions continued under the emperors Domitian, Trajan, Marcus Aurelius, Septimus Severus. It was under Severus that today's martyr saints, Perpetua and Felicity, who we mentioned earlier, were killed for the faith. Maximus, Decius, Valerian, and then peaked under Diocletian and Galerius. These were those just before the emperor Constantine and his conversion to the faith. As he says, leading right up to Constantine's conversion in 312, Christians periodically suffered the most horrible treatment by the pagan Roman state. Christians were stripped and flogged with whips, put on the rack, scraped with iron combs, used to card wool, had salt and vinegar poured over their fresh wounds. They were slowly roasted to death over fires individually or thrown on great piles to be burned alive in mass. They were strangled or run through with swords, tied hand and foot, put into boats, once pushed out to sea, drowned, jailed, led into the arena to be torn to pieces by panthers, bears, boars, and bulls. They had their skin torn bit by bit with pottery shards, or they were decapitated. Women were stripped and hung upside down for public humiliation. The list goes on and on. Weicker says, I document these very real atrocities in such detail so as to combat any notion of romanticism we might have about martyrdom. Christians then were no more romantic about such hideous treatment at the hands of a pagan state than were Christians in the 20th century who were tortured and mowed down by the communist state. If you think about what these Christians actually endured at the hands of the pagan state, you will realize with what jubilation, what extreme thankfulness to God, what declarations of it all being miraculous, Christians 1,700 years ago greeted the news of Constantine's conversion. I mean, if you could travel back in time, you know, if you could hop in that DeLorean by, Emmett Brown and land back in the time of the Roman Empire, right around Constantine's conversion, would you say, oh, you simple-minded fools, don't you realize that what you have now, the suffering for the faith, what an honor. And what's happening now with Constantine and the legitimization in the Roman Empire of your faith is actually a disaster. You would really say that to them with a straight face? Those kind of speculations, I think, are oftentimes spoken by those of us who take for granted the relative peace that we enjoy as Christian believers in the West. Now, there's no doubt that there were problems after Constantine's conversion because of human nature and because of sin and all the rest. And certainly there have been mistakes made. But you think about the positives that came out of Constantine's conversion, the fact that the church actually could be a public entity, that the church could actually witness transformation of a culture. As Weicker said, the pagan Roman culture happily affirmed contraception, abortion, infanticide, suicide, euthanasia, pornography. You go down the list. Once the emperors became Christian, both the church and the Christian imperium engaged in the moral transformation of a pagan society, and the Christian moral understanding was incorporated into law in the various imperial codes. And quite unlike Rome before Constantine, both the church and the Christian state began to care for the poor and destitute, the widows and the orphans. And as I said, it was Constantine, of course, who called together the Council of Nicaea. That's that council in which all the Catholic bishops gathered together to struggle through these questions about who Jesus is, his very nature. And it's from that council, as well as a council later at Constantinople, that we have this creed that we say in every Sunday Mass that clarifies what it is we believe about Jesus, what really matters at the heart of our faith and his identity. As Weicker says, Constantine himself called the famous Council of Nicaea the council from which all Christians have received the Nicene Creed outlining the basics of the Christian faith. Contrary to our notion that everyone in the early church was singing the same doctrinal tune, the bishops of the 3rd century church were themselves split into irreconcilable factions. You had those who affirmed Christ's full divinity and those who declared he was created, the Arians after the Bishop Arius. Scripture itself couldn't decide the issue. Isn't that interesting? Because both sides were quoting it to their purposes. And in fact, the canon of the New Testament, that's C-A-N-O-N, had yet to be officially decided. So I guess I would say be careful before you sweep Constantine's conversion into the dustbin of a negative view of that event. And he recommends, Weicker does, an excellent book by Peter Lighthart called Defending Constantine. I see the same tendency today, by the way. I see, this ominous shadow of potential anti-Catholic persecution coming down the pike over issues related to religious liberty, to marriage, and so forth. And I see some Christians saying, yes, that's just what we need to awaken us from our slumber. Persecution, martyrdom, we'll be just like the early church. Well, never forget, there were plenty of people who abandoned the faith under the threat of persecution as well. Not something we should itch for. We'll face it if it comes, when it comes, but Constantine's conversion, in my view, a good thing. We'll be back. This is the Mike Allen Show.